maybe.
Yeah, this is my mate on air, Fevzi Turkamp, who's got a voice with a little more gravitas than my, almost as much as Ola's. You're the gadget detective. Did you just hear my voice? Did you hear me doing a little bit of acting there?
I did. You had me trembling.
Yeah, with anticipation. There you go. Keep talking about my wife. Stop it. There you go. How are you, fella?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Stop interfering with Marks and Spencers. What on earth are you doing?
It wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Now you sound like Shaggy. It wasn't me. what's happened there? And it isn't just Marks and Spencers, is it? They're interfering with a couple of them.
Well, you know, it's most large organisations have their computer systems under attack constantly. And this is even putting aside, you know, when they mess up their own systems when they're not attacked. But most large organisations have people whose job it is to fend off perpetual attacks. And mostly they do a good job, but sometimes people get through. And it's interesting, when I say sometimes people get through, increasingly AI tools get through. So, you know, we're talking about the harm that AI could do. AI is being used as a tool by bad actors to attack computer systems. And then, of course, now increasingly AI is being used to defend against AIs. It's a bit like virus and antivirus. We, you know, someone creates a virus, we have an antivirus software to stop it, then they improve their virus, and then it's just, you know, cat and mouse, as it were. So this will perpetually happen, unfortunately. And we've seen sort of outages that have affected things like airports, for example. And what it does tell me is not that we will ever stop people being successful in attacking these systems, but we need more redundancy and resilience in these systems so that even when they do come down, there are backups that will kick in and allow people to still go about their daily business.
And the problem is we're human, so prevention, cause, you know, cure. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's a bit like the parking ticket, you know what I mean? I'm going to spend the £3 because it's a lot cheaper than the £80. But if people don't think that they're ever going to have to pay the £80, it's just like that for me. Seeing as you mentioned AI... And by the way, my wife is having a relationship with AI. I came home the other day to hear her going, yeah, but do you think I look nice today?
And did it?
I said, I don't know what it thinks. Well, I think the way you look like you always do. Apparently that wasn't the right thing.
Yes, that's probably why she's turned to AI to ask that question, Eddie. You know?
But why has AI turned up on my WhatsApp? I am like, you are taking the bleep now. Yeah. I mean, those of you who don't have it, I understand. And I know that you don't use it, which is why I asked producer Ella to ask you to take a look. Mm. On my WhatsApp, as I look at it now, they've stuck an AI. And it just says, ask Meta AI or search. Yeah. Now, when and why?
So it's probably just worth saying that. So if you're a user of WhatsApp, you may have seen a blue circle with a sort of pink and green splash on it. And that is an indication that Meta's latest AI tool has come to WhatsApp. They're rolling it out over time, so not everyone has seen it everywhere yet. And this is a large language model, a chatbot, if you like, similar to ChatGPT in function. It uses Meta's Llama, one of their Llama models, Llama 4 to be specific. And the thing to say about it is that it's interesting that it's turned up there, and it makes me rather suspicious. A lot of focus has been given to, well, why can't I disable it, and why do I have to disable it? Why isn't it an opt-in? And interestingly, there isn't another option that they've brought in. No one's really talking about this, but it's the ability to have AI be performed locally on your device rather than over the internet. And the interesting thing about that would enhance your privacy. That is an opt-in. You have to know it's there, find it, and then opt-in to local processing. And yet, their new chatbot is there by default. Now, it's true, you don't have to press the button and speak to it, but my concern would be, do we know what it's monitoring when it's there? Because Meta make a big play of the fact that WhatsApp messages are end-to-end encrypted. So what does that mean? That means as the message leaves your device, it's scrambled, and it, as it flies through the air, it's in a scrambled form, and when it arrives at the recipient, it's unscrambled. So the idea is that that's very secure. No one can read the message, not even Meta. However, if there is an AI actively working on your device at that time, how are we sure that it's not actually interpreting and absorbing the message, using it for training or whatever other purpose? How can we be sure that our messages are not being read by that AI and then being processed in some way? We don't know for sure.
It's always been your worry, and I think we probably, for full transparency, should declare that you've opted out of this for a minute, haven't you? I've tried to message you and you go like, I'm not doing that. You need to send me on this. You made it very clear.
It's just, yeah. So I trust certain organisations as far as I could throw them, and they are rather large. So I won't use certain tools. I just won't, unless I sort of sandbox them, which is to say put it on a machine that's separate, that has no connection to me or my data, just for experimental purposes. I can poke it with a stick safely then, and I do that from time to time. But I won't use it on my device that's got my contact list, my location, my camera, my microphone. I just won't do that. But we should ask the question, why is that not an opt-in feature? I mean, Microsoft had a similar issue when they came up with a system that was going to take snapshots of what you're doing on your computer from moment to moment, so that you could roll back and find out what you did. And, you know, it could be very useful knowing what you were doing on your computer 3 months ago. But people push back against that, and it became an opt-in feature. I hope there's something similar will happen here.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, I don't have Alexa, and I see that circle, and it just it makes me feel less easy on WhatsApp. But probably for somebody doing the job I does, a reminder that nothing is completely private, and were people to have it malintent, ill intent, it might be something that could be used against you. So for me, it's made me think very, very carefully, which Mrs. Nessa would say is not a bad thing, about what I put it on there. Right, look, I like everybody can hear that you're not your normally bouncy self. Are you okay? Is there anything that we can do? Are you okay?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
You're not perfect, fella. I can hear you.
Well, I am.
You're not perfect. You tell me you don't want to tell me. Well, don't tell me you're perfect, okay? You see how I can pick a fight?
Do I have to tweak you for this now? I mean, we've gone a lot. We've had a truce up till now. I mean, do I really have to do that?
It's horrible when you get to that point with someone, and it just absolutely, it's not. I'm there with Ola. It just doesn't. There's nothing I can do. It does. It's like I sit here and watch you interfere with people every day. You're not going to do it to me, and I'm so disappointed in you and myself. Right, Fevzi Turkamp is the gadget detective. Not only do I use him every couple of weeks to talk to me about whatever happens in the world of innovation, should we be scared, should we be concerned, I open it up to you. If you're listening and there's something that you want to know about in that world, then send your emails to eddie@bbc.co.uk and I will send it to Fevzi on your behalf. But he also, I can attest to this, a laptop, what have I got? My headphones here today. Too many power storage devices to mention. He also helps us with the stuff that we need, stuff that we don't need, and stuff that we can get cheaper and is of quality. And we are eternally grateful to him for that. As I say, important, and I probably should have been emphasizing this part of it more than I have been, Fevzi, is that if there is something you want us to look at, Fevzi, to look at, investigate, or articulate, then send your emails to eddie@bbc.co.uk and we get that sorted for you. Right, where are we starting today, fella?
Right, well, today we're just going to look at some gadget bargains. These are things that we've looked at in the past, but have dropped in price or are particular interest at the moment.
Can I stop you straight away and then I won't stop you again?
Yep.
Are we getting, you know, I've looked and some of the stuff that was going to America is going to come here.
Mm-hmm.
Are we looking at that thing that I saw in, I don't know, Japan, where I'm not going to buy that telly I want today, or I'm not going to buy that unit I want tomorrow, I'm not going to buy that computer, and Mrs. Nessa was totally fixated with what you said about mobile phones a couple of weeks ago. Am I not going to buy that thing today because it will be cheaper next month?
Well, I think the rule of thumb, excuse me, my voice, the rule of thumb is generally don't buy something before you need it. Well, don't buy something you don't need at all, but even if you're going to need it in the future, buy it when you need it, generally speaking, because technology continues to improve. It generally drops in price, although, you know, tariffs may, we'll talk about that in a moment. But I've made the mistake myself in the past of buying something because it was cheap and I knew that I'd need it in, you know, 6 months' time. But then 6 months became 18 months and there'd been two sort of improved models since then. So in terms of conserving your money, your cash flow, your space, buy things when you need them, not before. That does give you a little bit less flexibility, but also a bit less stress about constantly monitoring the prices of things. And if you are going to constantly monitor the price, you know, there are tools that you can use to do that, like Camel, Camel, Camel. You can actually set price alerts to say, if this price drops by a penny, if it drops by at least 10%, you know, notify me. So that's a good thing to do. But the thing that's made everything a bit more complicated now is the tariffs. And although it's not yet clear what effect it will have on the prices of which products, it's not good news for us, even though, you know, we're supposedly getting hit with lower tariffs. We are being hit with tariffs. And it's not just what we're being hit with. You know, products are now made from components that are all over the world who have a very complex supply chain. And all tariffs in the way that they're being applied will only be bad news for us, I'm afraid. So having said that, and I think I gave you the example a couple of weeks ago, didn't I, that to say that I was considering buying a MacBook, an Apple laptop, and normally I would have waited till towards the end of this year when the new MacBook Pros would come out. I'm now not going to do that. I'm actually going to buy one this year with the current model, even though it might be replaced in sort of 6 or 8 months' time, because I'm not confident that there won't be a significant increase when that one comes out. Normally, the prices are steady, and Apple are good in that they normally don't increase the price during a particular model's reign, you know. But when the new model comes out, all bets are off, and we don't know what the world economy is going to look like by then. It's very hard to say that we wouldn't have a 20% increase or something.
Well done, mate. You know, we hang on you. You are our leader. And we hang on your every word. Right, now we've done that. Let's start. We'll get one in, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back. Is that all right with you?
Okay, yeah.
Right, let's
you know, you know my passion for synthesizers. There's one from an Italian company.
You got one for every day of the week, haven't you?
Yeah, well, how many days of the week are there? I think I've got more than that. So there's an Italian company called IK Multimedia. Now, Italians have got a rich history in synth pop music, you know. People don't necessarily realise, but, you know, that sort of Giorgio Moroder sort of input has been very important for Italians. So IK Multimedia, Italian company, they produce a small compact keyboardless synthesizer that you then plug into a keyboard. It's called the Uno Synth Pro X. It's one of the best paraphonic monophonic synthesizers out there. It means it's got one voice or three voices depending on how you measure it. It's an amazing machine. It used to sell for €500. And a couple of weeks ago, I said you can get it for £225 from Thomann, that German retailer we talked about. Thomann has now run out of stock. This is an item that is no longer manufactured. I've had it from the manufacturers. They're not making any more. So it's just what's in the shops and in their warehouses. This morning when I checked Amazon, it wasn't in stock there either. Half an hour ago, it was. They had, I think, 9 of them in stock. The price is not $225, but it is $235. That's still about half of what it was before. If you're at all interested in that sort of thing, take a look.
When you do take,
I bought my one already.
I know you. We know.
And then I.
And then you tell us about it. When something is discontinued, I got these QSC speakers, which I love. I absolutely love. I think they're the best ones for me, at the top of my price range. And then they discontinue stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, I could buy some secondhand ones. What is it? Is there a general rule about stuff that's really good, but not but discontinued? Is there a general rule that you apply?
It depends. I mean, I've bought a lot of synthesizers from the sort of late 70s and 80s, and obviously they were discontinued decades ago. And you go to eBay and specialist resellers, and you do your due diligence and try and buy the, you know, one in as good a condition as you can. Through eBay, you get, you know, 30-day money-back period. So I've done that. It's interesting, you know, because a lot of synthesizers are not normally replaced by better ones.
Okay.
It's not like a...
This is different.
It's not necessarily a computer where you've got the latest, you know, M-series processor from Apple and it's going to be faster and better and whatever. The sounds are different. That's why... And this is also to do with taste and fashion. You know, certain sounds become popular again in sort of modern music. So people go back and crave these old synthesizers.
So is that you holding on to your flared jeans because eventually they will become fashionable again?
I didn't know that they'd gone out.
Get off.
Is that right?
I'm going to come back to you. Let me just talk to somebody who probably knows a little bit about flared jeans and synthesizers. Here's Mr. Billy Reeves. We're talking synthesizers. We've talked about. We've talked about AI, and we've talked about some of the challenges that Marks and Spencers have been having. I think it's the resilience to cyber attack. That means that I'm talking to the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkamp, who I must say is fabulous, and sort of we've kept going with this. And people do meet me and go, thank you very much, I managed to get a bargain. So it makes up for some of the other stuff, Fev. So we got you another synthesizer. Did you know the one that Billy mentioned there?
The DX7,
yeah.
That was my first synthesizer.
My worst fear is that one day Ola presses the wrong button and the two of you start talking to each other, because I can only imagine even Billy Reeves.
I'll tell you a story. I was a teenager. I was in Ibiza, and I was already besotted by synthesizers because of the music, right? I came to it through the music. And... I met someone who managed a music store, a synthesizer store in Leicester, and he was very drunk. And he said, well, any time you want to buy your first synthesizer, come to me, I'll give you one, you know, trade price. And I coveted the DX7. And at the time, the DX7 was amazing. It was the first digital synthesizer, you know, of its type. Before that, everything was analog, these big, fat, brassy sounds. Suddenly you had this sort of very brittle, crystalline sound from the DX7. And I didn't think anything of it, but I took his card. And then I got really ill. I got seriously ill, and I got flown home early, and I got put in an isolation hospital. And I was a bit feeling sorry for myself. So I decided that if I didn't die, I would buy myself this synthesizer. So I didn't die, as you may have gathered. And I got the card, and I rang the guy. And he, despite his clear drunkenness at the time, not only did he remember, but he made good on his word. And this is when, at the time when Stevie Wonder was having trouble getting one of these synthesizers, and he sold me a trade and threw in a keyboard amplifier as well.
Gosh.
I will never, ever find a way to thank that man, because this synthesizer is still 6 feet from where I'm sitting. I can almost...
That's a great story. That's a great story. And I'm doing the synths, and you probably know, doing the job that I do, you kind of don't really know an awful lot about anything, but you know a little bit about quite a lot. So I'm arguing in the music there, is Stevie the one, and it's just interesting that you mentioned Stevie Wonder there, is Stevie the one who brought the synthesizer to life? And Ola, who's a lot older than me and wiser than me, but not Herbie Hancock. Where did you first hear it?
So you had Herbie Hancock's Rocket. Well, Stevie Wonder was actually worked a lot with Yamaha, who made the DX7, and he used sort of versions of that technology before they became mainstream. So they were on his music before that. But things like, you know, Depeche Mode, Gary Numan, those sort of very... That was a complete... For me as a teenager...
You never heard them on the Beach Boys?
Yes, but it wasn't the same. I mean, and the Beatles used a synth on one of their tracks as well. But it wasn't the same vibe. It was completely different.
I've got to tell you, this is why I need Ola on the show. I think there are lots of people who maybe they're not musicians, but they certainly have played and they're certainly aware with it. They may not be have reached the heights of Billy Reeves, but they certainly understand it. And what we are doing now is building up our profile of the type of music that you like. Yeah. Because whilst you know that it has been used by Beach Boys or whoever, you only really become excited at certain types of artists and the way they use it.
So things like Visage, Fade to Grey, Tubeway Army, early Depeche Mode, that sort of thing, Yazoo, and a bit later on. That just made me very happy, and it still does. It's like the flares I still wear.
It's the Yazoo. There's something about that. So anyway, look, stop. Come on.
Shall we carry on?
I'm enjoying this, but it isn't why you're on. Right. I need to get to the end of it. Right. Okay. So we've done the synth. What are we doing now?
Right. So we've got a laser 4K projector from Anker, A-N-K-E-R. It's called the Nebula Cosmos Laser 4K Projector. So this is a top-of-the-range projector that's just dropped in price massively. So to give you an idea, this thing is transportable. It's about sort of just over 10 pounds in weight. It's a 4K resolution. The fact it uses laser means it's crisper and much better resolution. It has some really good capabilities. It's got Dolby Audio built in. It's got a very bright projection, 2,200 lumens. What does that mean? It means that even in daylight, you don't have to dim the lights, you don't have to draw the curtains, you can still project an image onto the wall or screen or onto your neighbor's property, and you'll be able to see it very, very clearly, and that's quite a special thing. It can throw an image of up to 150-inch diagonal, so imagine, I mean, I wouldn't recommend you go that big with it.
Don't stop. Okay.
What? Don't or don't stop?
They both apply to you. I'm a Gemini, so I'm allowed to do both.
I'm a Gemini, I'm allowed to disregard you. It's not in my gift. So the point being, why have I raised this today? Because we've looked at this before. This thing's got a list price of £2,000, just pound change from 2,000. It's currently £899, which is not cheap, but it's 55% off the price.
So hold on. Maybe 8 or 9 years ago, in fact, in the lockdown, Mrs. Nestor bought me a small one, which we've used from time to time, and it's good fun. But when you came on last time, the children were on half term, and I went in, and the 11-year-old thinks he's clever, and he stuck something in the box. He is fascinated now by the idea of projectors. Now, why would I buy a and I'm not talking about this for him, because he's got £800 to spend on anything that an 11-year-old wants, not me. The question I have for you is, why are we talking about projectors now? Why aren't we doing OLED TVs that curve and do the... Why would anybody get a projector instead of a TV?
Because, so I get brought TVs to test, you know, pushing sort of 90 inches and they take a four-man team, and I do mean men, big burly men, four of them, to bring it into my home and then to take it back out again. Once you get past a certain screen size, it becomes quite impractical, becomes a bit scary mounting one of these heavy beasts even to your wall, and you don't have any flexibility about where you use it. You can't take it away with you on a holiday or a, you know, camping trip or whatever you want. Here you can throw an image which is up to 150 inches, which is quite amazing, in 4K resolution with full brightness, and it has some good tricks to it. So, for example, it's got Android TV operating system built into it. So what does that mean? It means that you can plug things into it the way you do with a normal, you know, projector. You can put a Blu-ray into it or attach it to your computer or whatever.
But it's a sound, fella. You can't have something that big without appropriate sound.
Well, and again, the sound in this is so much better, because one of the problems with TV sets is as they get thinner and thinner, you know, you can't, can he break the laws of physics? You can't get a good sound out of something that's that shallow. So you end up having to add a speaker set to a normal TV set anyway.
Oh, gosh, I thought that was standard now. I honestly, no. So sorry. Obviously, so I've got mine the other day, and a mate's come round, and I didn't buy it, right? I'd resisted it. Just quickly tell you this story. I'd resisted it, and then a mate's come round, and he said, look, I've got an old Bose one. Do you want it? And you know me, I like a bargain. And he's come round, and I just put it on. I thought, oh, that's loud. And then another mate has come round and gone, you haven't set it up properly, and you got to ping it. And I said, what do you mean, ping it? And then he goes, look, and then he did it for me, where it kind of pings around the room, measures the size of the room. Yeah. And then now I couldn't listen to our telly without it. So how would you do that with, because I can see, I do these trips and I could see how I could take that on a plane and then put one of my films on and 150 people could sit out in the sunshine and you could do a fully immersive experience watching a film. I could see how that could work.
Bear
really
in mind,
well.
This thing is big. I mean, it's £10, right? £10.4. But it's got built-in dual 10-watt subwoofers, 5-watt tweeters.
Oh,
it's got decent sound built in.
Right.
But what I was trying to say to you about the Android operating system in it, so it's got the gubbins of a smartphone built into it, including the ability to run apps. So you can run apps like Disney+, Google Play, HBO, Netflix, YouTube, all that sort of thing. So instead of having to sort of beam stuff at it, it absorbs it, you know, from your Wi-Fi itself. And then displays it. So it's got all the programming sort of built into it.
How many stars, fella?
Well, it's 5 stars, but the point to this is the price, $899. That's
you
the
haven't given anything 5 stars in the years
of. Sorry,
did
I say 5?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm a bit off my game today. Let's call it 4.5.
I did say that. I said you're off your game. You said, no, I'm not.
Well, I wasn't until you suggested I was, and now, you know, the auto-suggestion has had its effect on me.
Am I breaking any rules of showing things publicly using apps on something that would be on the outside of the, just in case anybody else gets involved in this conversation, is it subject to any guidance or rules?
Because the version of Android will be licensed by the manufacturer, so you can use that
whatever you want.
On whatever's available. Yeah, great. I mean they'll block what they want to block. Right, moving on quickly. Molecule Air Mini Plus. Molecule spelt with a K, not a C in the middle. The Air Mini Plus is a smaller air purifier for homes and offices up to floor areas of 25 square meters. This is quite a remarkable air filter because it's got this bespoke PECO filter, P-E-C-O, which not only traps allergens, bacteria, viruses, and so forth, but it actually kills them, which is kind of special. It's also got a smart air quality sensor built into it. So it can detect, first of all, when the air quality goes bad and then switches itself on and then connects to an app and shows you exactly what it's done. Usually £449.99, currently just under £300. So bargain. Not cheap, but it's the best of its kind. Particularly if you have any, not only for people with breathing problems, but if you have ever had breathing problems, this could bring you a lot of relief overnight as well.
I know you got 3 more. You've got to pick a good one for me. I'm sorry, this is all my fault. I've enjoyed talking to you too much about
it since.
What have you got? What something that Ola says something that he might like, please.
Okay, it's hard to say. All right. Okay, let's go to Crucial. The Crucial P310, it's an SSD, like a hard disk drive with no moving parts. This thing is not much bigger than a postage stamp. It is used to update typically handheld gaming machines, things like the Stream Deck, you know, these ones with a sort of like color screen and controls on either side, handheld type devices. But in fact, my laptop, I have a Dell laptop that takes one of these as well. So this is a way of updating the storage, upgrading the storage inside your device. Works with the Steam Deck, Asus ROG, all of these, Microsoft Surface as well. And you can upgrade them, and they've dropped in price quite remarkably. So the 1 terabyte version £72. The 2 terabyte version, £133. It wasn't so long ago they were double that price.
Ola's a ready tapping fella. Where is that available?
That's on Amazon.
Just like it's, I keep saying it isn't just for me and you, Ola. And I'm just hoping, just to let you know, every couple of weeks we do it. And if there's something that you want the very kind Fibsy to look up, he is absolutely prepared to do it and to tell you if it's worth it. I personally think we probably should have a look at a soundbar or two next week, because so many people are having them. And I'm probably confident in saying they don't have to be as expensive as some people have
almost spending. Anything is an improvement on what comes. You can spend £1,000 on a television set and improve the audio with a £50 soundbar because the audio is so bad.
There you go. Cubs, you look after yourself. So stay healthy, stay safe, and please accept my gratitude for coming. That's Gadget Detective Fevzy Turkap.